Chapter 1. Milarepa's World and Philosophy. A Singing Guru. The stories we are going to consider here are taken from a work known as the 100,000 Songs of Milarepa, which records the inspired poetic utterances of the famous, revered and much-loved 11th century Tibetan yogi and poet. The figure of 100,000 is a considerable exaggeration, of course, but the episodes I want to discuss do each include a number of songs which convey the distinctive flavour of the work as a whole. They are very approachable and often quite light-hearted, even humorous, while at the same time they express the very essence of dedicated spiritual practice. They were composed almost 1,000 years ago. At the time Milarepa was alive, the Normans were conquering England, and in continental Europe, the Holy Roman Emperors were quarrelling with the papacy. In the Americas, the Mayas were establishing a new empire in Yucatan, while in China, the northern Song Dynasty was appeasing the Mongols by surrendering territory. And in India, a 1,500-year period of Buddhist culture was coming dramatically to an end, for this was the time of the Muslim invasion. Buddhist monasteries were being destroyed, monks were being murdered, gurus were being scattered, and as a result, the teachings were being speedily lost. In Tibet, by contrast, Buddhism was enjoying a long-awaited renaissance. The arrival from India of the master Atisha had coincided with a period in which centralized political control had broken up. As a result, local fiefdoms were flourishing, presided over by regional nobles, and this helped to bring about a corresponding diversity of cultural and religious custom. It is generally thought that the songs of Milarepa were compiled and written down by a yogi of the Kagyu school of Tibetan Buddhism in the 14th century, but we cannot be sure how many of them were passed down from Milarepa himself, and how many of them were composed by the inspired compiler. It may well be that, having put together the songs that had come down to his time, the writer felt there were gaps that needed to be filled, and wrote extra songs where they seemed to be required. Which of the songs were sung by Milarepa himself is therefore a matter for scholars to research and debate, and we cannot take them as records of actual meetings at specific times and places. At least some of them may be composites of a number of occasions, people and locations, but they have the fresh and vivid sense of actual events, and also communicate spiritual teachings of a high standard. From a literary point of view, the fact that the compiler may have put some of his own verses into the mouth of Milarepa hardly seems to matter. If he did, he was a great poet himself, with a considerable gift for narrative. From a spiritual point of view, if he composed some of the songs, he must have been a person of advanced spiritual development. In Tibetan scroll paintings, or tankas, Milarepa is often depicted as green in colour. This is because, for many years, he lived a solitary mountain existence, subsisting only on nettles, and apparently this had the effect of turning his body green. He is usually shown naked, except for a small cotton cloth, his only covering in the bitter snows of the Tibetan mountain ranges. But he is remembered chiefly for his songs, and they really are songs, not just lyrical poems. In fact, we can get a pretty good idea how Milarepa's songs would have sounded. Singing and chanting are still popular and widespread among Tibetan people. I lived in the Himalayan town of Kalimpong in the 1950s, when it was starting to fill up with Tibetan refugees, and I would often meet Tibetan beggars, whether ordinary people or monks, who used to sing. They would come to the door and chant verses of blessing on the house, accompanying themselves on a little drum, and setting the verses to a distinctive and pleasant melody. Most of us are familiar with the kind of sound produced by Tibetan monks chanting pujas, but it is not only monks who chant in this way. Wherever there is a group of Tibetans working together, perhaps in the fields or building a house, you will hear a traditional song with very similar cadences, though without the complex overtones to be heard in the monastery. These are not sophisticated melodies. Tibetan songs are rather like those of village India or Christian hymns, with each verse sung to the same simple tune. In the Tibetan folk tradition, you sometimes have not even a melody, but a simple succession of notes to which each group of two or four lines is sung. Many Tibetans could come up with a song like this more or less spontaneously, making it up as they went along. This is fairly easy because of the structure of the Tibetan language. Tibetan is largely monosyllabic, and it is therefore not difficult to string words together in lines of 8 or 12 syllables and chant them to a simple tune picked out on a single-stringed instrument. Anyone with a dash of ingenuity and inspiration can keep this up for a long time. The so-called 100,000 songs have been translated into English by Gama C.C. Chang. Here is an example of the way his translation sometimes comes close to the original verse form, with its repeated rhythm of more or less 8 syllables, taken from the verses called Complimentary Song to the Deities of Red Rock Jewel Valley. This lonely spot where stands my hut is a place pleasing to the Buddhas, a place where accomplished beings dwell, a refuge where I dwell alone. The tantric song form, the Vajra Gita, can be traced back to the songs of the wandering musician yogis of medieval India, who practiced yoga, meditation, and other forms of spiritual training while supporting themselves in a variety of ways. Many lived a solitary life in hermitages or even cremation grounds, while others lived as householders. But they all had something in common, their uncompromising dedication to spiritual practice. Milarepa is associated above all with inspiration, both lyrical and spiritual, and this is reflected in the poetic form in which it is expressed. The same is true of the Buddha himself, many of whose more exalted utterances are gathered into a collection of discourses known as the Udanas, teachings expressed in verse form, suggesting heightened inspiration, a communication from an even higher level than is normal for an enlightened one. The songs of Milarepa have significance for us because they express the truths and experiences of authentic Buddhist practice. They have an immediacy that resonates even today, so many years after they are first uttered. The songs are about not only the harshness and remoteness of the Tibetan mountain ranges, but also the peaks and valleys of an inner terrain, the inner world of the tantric yogi.